Welcome to Peak Health, a radio show dedicated to empowering you to take back control of your health so that you can have the freedom to live the life that you want. I'm Lisa Morse, naturopathic physician on the island at Fern Cove Natural Medicine. I'm dedicated to helping you uncover the root cause of your symptoms so that you can get back on the road to feeling well again.
And I'm Claire DeNice, certified health and wellness coach and a personal trainer. Our show is going to bring you information to help you take charge of your health. We're going to cover topics like IBS, heartburn, thyroid disorders, autoimmune diseases, osteoporosis, nutrition, and lots more.
Hi, Claire.
Hi, Lisa. How are you today?
I'm doing well. How are you?
You know, I'm great. I'm even enjoying this kind of iffy weather and just getting into the fall and especially into the series of radio shows where we're talking to people about physical medicine.
I know. It's great. I love it.
Yeah.
So today on the show, we have Catherine Henderson. She is an osteopathic cranial practitioner that practices on the island and also in West Seattle. And I personally feel like the island is very blessed to have her. And so I'm excited for our talk today.
Me too. I just met Catherine and can't wait to hear more about the practice of osteopathy. Am I saying that correctly?
Yes. Welcome, Catherine.
Thank you. Yeah. I'm delighted to be here.
Good. I'm glad to have you here. So as per usual, I kind of just start, usually like to start out and ask how people got into the field that they're in. So Catherine, how did you become an osteopathic cranial practitioner?
Well, as you can hear from my accent, I'm British, and I grew up there where osteopathy is much more well known than it seems to be in this country. My younger brother got treated for allergies and sinus problems, and he was on really heavy antihistamines. And my parents got very disillusioned with what the medical doctor was giving him. And a friend said, my son has been really helped with asthma by an osteopath. Why don't you take him along to see what he can do? And my parents went, wow, but those are sort of quacks who deal with bad backs. What can they do for a young child? But they went along, tried it out, and within a couple of months, his breathing had cleared up. He was off the antihistamines, doing much better at school. And so all our family turned to the osteopath for our medical care. And so I was nine at the time. And then years later, I hadn't ever considered this as a career, but and in British education, you have to choose very young whether you're going towards arts or sciences by about 13, 14. So I was much more on the arts track. And then I had to take some time out of high school because I was sick, and I kind of rethought my life at the age of 16. And during a counseling session, I was being asked what I wanted to do with my life. And the osteopath's image came in a little bubble. And I went, I think I want to do what he does. Wow. So
that's
right out of high school.
Interesting.
Yes. Mm-hmm. It was definitely a calling. Mm. And so right out of high school in 1976, I started studying at a school called the European School of Osteopathy. And I was the youngest person in the school because a lot of people had heard about it as a second career while they were traveling or in an ashram in India, or they'd met an osteopath in London and decided to train in their 30s. And I was also the only woman in my class. So it was quite a pioneering experience, but I also really found my group of my peeps, of people that I really resonated with. And so that was a wonderful discovery.
Nice.
It's fascinating that at 16, they're asking you what you should do with the rest of your life. And it's very interesting that you got that bubble, and it's worked out well.
Yeah. I just love the story, you know, with your brother, like, because I feel like that's how a lot of people seek out other treatments, alternative medical treatment, when they're just not getting the answers that they want. And so I love that when there's something that can help a person's body heal. It's awesome. Okay. So can you tell me a little bit about the history of the practice of osteopathy?
Yes, it's actually the original American form of integrated medicine. It was founded in 1871 in Kirksville, Missouri, which is a very small town. by Andrew Taylor Still. And Dr. Still was a surgeon in the Civil War at the time when medical schools didn't exist and you did an apprenticeship. And he came back home to Missouri and three of his children died of meningitis. Mm-hmm. And he was very disillusioned with medicine as the day that they couldn't be saved. And he was kind of a Renaissance man. He was a farmer. And he also was connected with the local Shawnee Indian tribes. So he started, with his observations of nature, he started to experiment, and along with his understanding of anatomy from being a surgeon, he started to experiment and think about how the structure and the function relationships were in the body. And legend has it that he had a headache and he lay on his swing in the garden and put traction under the back of his head and his headache went away. Legend also has it that a feverish child was brought to him and he felt the head was very hot and the base of the spine was very cold, and he did some gentle movements to even up the temperature and the child recovered quickly. So he started to think about the fact that all the nerves come out from the spine and also the blood vessels come out from the spine, and that you can track, for example, a problem in the digestive system back to the sympathetic nerve supply in the thoracic area and treat the thoracic nerve root to resolve the digestive problem. And so he looked into all of this, found it very effective, started a small school. The first chiropractor, Dr. Palmer, also heard of Still and came and studied a little bit with him and then went off and formed chiropractic. So both of these men were having these ideas around the same time in the cradle of the Midwest. Hmm. And then it grew, and there were several osteopathic schools and hospitals in the Midwest in places like Chicago. And so there they were practicing their manipulation skills, treating hands-on along with medicine and doing surgery. So surgical patients would get treated before and after with the hands-on manipulation. And also in the days before antibiotics, if you were in an osteopathic hospital with pneumonia, they would come around every hour and do rib raising and help your lymphatics and boost your immune system to help you get over your pneumonia. Then politics happened, and in the early 1920s, there was something called the Flexner Report, which really changed the whole face of holistic medicine in this country and supported the MD schools to be the primary medical schools. And the osteopaths got sidelined, though they were also required to have the same kind of training as the MD schools. So they were required to do pharmacology as well and all the other rotations and specialties that an MD does. And in the process of this, unfortunately, the manipulation skills got sidelined because there wasn't enough time to really devote to them. And so today we have a number of osteopathic schools, I think 15 in the US, where the manipulation skills are taught, but only a very small number of the students actually then continue to use them in their practicing lives. And the ones that are doing it are very dedicated and they do a lot more postgraduate training to do that. Outside of the US, osteopathy is not a medical physician training. It tends to be a 4 or 5 year full-time training for people that then come out with a diploma or a degree to use hands-on manipulation to treat a really wide variety of conditions, but they're not licensed medical doctors, so they don't have the pharmacology or the surgery. But they will tend to treat everybody who comes to them as an outpatient with their hands, not just musculoskeletal problems, but problems with the organs and functional issues as well.
Wow. it just came to mind when my one grandson was about 3 weeks old. I went down to visit him in California, and my daughter took him to an osteopathic practitioner. I'm not quite sure what the proper title was, but she was manipulating him and said that he had one leg wouldn't straighten and the other one would. Mm-hmm. And she said he had something in his hip, and it may have been from the way he lay in utero. Mm-hmm. And that when she turned his head one way, it turned. And when she turned his head the other way, his whole body turned. Mm. And it was really fascinating for me to watch, because when she got done manipulating whatever she did, his head turned both ways without his whole body turning, and his legs laid out flat like they were supposed to. So it became, I became a true believer just from watching that.
So I have a question. So you mentioned, so most of the osteopaths in the United States, they don't do the body work. How would somebody know, like, if they wanted to go see an osteopath, like, how would they, do you know how they would find out? Find an osteopath that does the body work?
Oh, yes. Well, there's two lists online. The American Academy of Osteopathy has a website which lists all the osteopathic physicians who do use their hands to treat. And that includes a really wide variety of manipulation skills that they would use. Some of them would also be using more what we know as more chiropractic type maneuvers that click the spine. Then there's another group of osteopaths that specialize in cranial treatment or craniosacral treatment, where they're treating the whole body, but they're using a very gentle hands-on maneuver. And that's called the Osteopathic Cranial Academy. And they're listed there online, which also includes dentists. So if you're looking for somebody, so say you've got a young child, you want to make sure they don't have DDS after their name if you're looking for help for other things.
Okay.
So I've heard you mention several different types of practitioners, like chiropractic and the cranial. Can you differentiate for me between them?
Yes, great question. So a little bit about the history here. The chiropractic, as I mentioned, chiropractic evolved around the same time as osteopathy. And as many of you know, it's chiropractors are not physicians. They're doctors of chiropractic. And they have independent practices where they treat people with their hands for a really wide variety of issues. The osteopaths, as I mentioned earlier, the osteopathic physicians in the US are medical doctors. And so they have they have DO after their name, Doctor of Osteopathy, and they're practicing as physicians and can do everything that a physician can do. And then we have craniosacral therapists, which is another different category. And perhaps before I go into that, I should just talk a little bit about the development of cranial work within the osteopathic profession. Because Andrew Taylor Still founded this school in the 1870s, and there are many lineages of different forms of manipulation skills that have come from Dr. Still. And many people, of course, had their own creative ideas and their own ways of doing things. And one of his followers was called Dr. Sutherland, and he had an insight that the cranial bones actually moved, and he was looking at this skull that was mounted, and the bones that the ear canals pass through, we call the temporal bones, and he looked at them and said, oh, they're beveled like the gills of a fish. It looks like they should breathe. And out of that insight, he developed by gently developing his hands-on skills in a very meditative way to sit with the body and feel how there was this palpable movement that the skull bones were expanding and contracting. It could also be felt anywhere else in the body. It's very strongly felt in the pelvis, but all the bony structure is doing this very gentle expansion and contraction. And that expansion and contraction can also be felt in the connective tissue and fascia. It can also be felt in the muscles. And then we also feel the ebb and flow of cerebrospinal fluid, which is kind of like a tidal ebb and flow that also can be felt anywhere in the body. So all of those factors are ways to evaluate the health of the person and how vital they are. And often those areas can become restricted as the effect of falls or accidents or trauma, stress. Anyway, so Dr. Sutherland taught a group of other osteopaths in the 40s and 50s, and this was regarded as rather sort of esoteric for the profession, who were really trying to get themselves established and talking about things in a very biomechanical way and using analogies of car parts and car engines. So the early cranial osteopaths also used this, and they talked about the ignition system. And there was actually a nickname of a car that was then used as a teaching aid. And then, you know, it started to get much more popular. And in the 60s and 70s, people were much more open to having, and especially it was a work that was very applicable to babies and young children, releasing their birth trauma, helping them with colic and crying as a very gentle and non-invasive treatment on the whole body. So it grew. And there was an osteopath in Michigan who was trying to staff a children's clinic, and he didn't have enough osteopaths locally to help him. So he decided to create a 10-step protocol of a very, very simple version of cranial osteopathy. And he called it craniosacral therapy and started teaching it to body workers. This was Dr. John Upledger. And so out of that, craniosacral therapy has grown in many ways, and it's taught by lots and lots of different people. And the practitioners can be anyone from just somebody with no training who goes to a few weekends classes to highly skilled people who are already physical therapists or acupuncturists, and they then add in the craniosacral training. So the challenge is that there isn't any kind of diploma or degree that shows how much training somebody's had. But there's also such an enormous need for this kind of more gentle bioenergetic work that it's really good that craniosacral therapy exists, and we have such a much wider range of practitioners that we can find.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah, that's interesting, because I hadn't really understood the craniosacral versus osteopathy. So thanks for explaining that.
You know, what just occurred to me, and tell me if I'm crazy or not, but with the so-called opioid epidemic, where it is, at least from what I've heard in the news, people are definitely searching for relief. And turning to some of these, I don't want to say they're obscure, but they're more obscure than mainstream getting a pill to fix whatever's wrong with you. Types of treatments might be a real help to getting off of not only opioids, but other medications, as you mentioned, for your brother.
Mm-hmm.
That just makes so much sense to me. And doing it naturally with the working with the body makes even more sense.
Yeah, that's a really good point, because we work so closely with the nervous system. Mm-hmm. And giving somebody an experience of their own nervous system being able to be relaxed and to allow it. You know, once we've had an inner experience of that, we then know what it feels like. We know how to reproduce it.
Mm-hmm.
And to be able to do it without, toxifying your system with a drug.
Nice.
Yeah.
I love it.
Cool.
So I just want to take a pause here for a second. We're a little bit over halfway in our show. And so you're listening to Voice of Vashon, KVSH 101.9 FM. And this is Peak Health. I'm Dr. Lisa Morse, and I'm here with Claire DeNice, health coach and personal trainer. And we are talking to Catherine Henderson, osteopathic cranial practitioner. So I wanted to ask next, tell me about the experience a person would have if they came to see you.
If it's an adult, we tend to sit down and take a regular kind of history, and which also includes, I'm curious about the history of falls and accidents and surgeries, because those are the kind of things that can affect the structure. Mm. And then we do an exam, look at gross movements, you know, bending down, side bending, that kind of thing. And then laying down on your back on a treatment table. And the evaluation and the treatment the first time really proceed together. And it's a very gentle hands-on experience with the practitioner putting their hands first on the ankles to get an overview of the body and these subtle movements that I referred to earlier. And then hands under the pelvis, the rib cage, the shoulders, the neck and the head. And people often get very sleepy, very relaxed. There's no sudden maneuvers or jerks that are done during the treatment. So they often really let go. Mm-hmm. I also work a lot with children, and parents are sometimes nervous to bring their child because they think they're going to be expected to lie still the whole time. Well, I have a lot of very interesting toys. And for under 2-year-olds, we treat them either sitting on the parent's lap or crawling around on the floor amongst the interesting toys. And then when they're old enough, they come and climb up on the treatment table. But a lot of the treatment can be done sitting with them looking at a book or being read to. So the lying down part is only a very short part of the treatment. And usually they've had such a good time, they're really happy with that.
Nice.
You'd be their favorite doctor type person to come and visit.
I bet. Okay, well, that's good. That's good to know. So what kind of conditions have you seen the therapy helpful for, or osteopathic?
Really a very wide range of things. I mean, classically, people tend to think of this work with they have a musculoskeletal problem, a muscle spasm or a pain. And then they hear the word cranial and they think about the head. So, you know, the effect of concussions, head injuries, vision problems, ear problems, balance issues, headaches, of course. But really, because of the way that we correlate the nerve and blood supply throughout the body, back to looking at structural restrictions that may occur in the spine or the spinal tissues, or anywhere in the structure, of course. The functioning of the organs can be disrupted, and we can get the physiology corrected if there's been a chronic problem that they may have been checked out with medical tests and nothing shows up, but they've still got the pain or they've still got the issue with the function. And that's often where we come in, and we can really see where the disruption is and treat it and resolve things. And I work a lot with pregnant women, helping their posture as that changes. I also worked a lot with gynecological issues, menstrual problems, difficulty menstruating. I've worked a lot with digestive problems, with coughs and respiratory problems. Things like sometimes somebody might have a rapid heartbeat, which again, they've been fully checked out. There's nothing showing up organic on the tests. And we look at the nerve reflexes in the rib cage and correct that, and that calms down. So a very wide range of things.
Yeah.
So what just came to my mind was watching the Seahawks game last night, and Russell Wilson, the quarterback, got hit sort of, I'd say, underneath the jaw on one side by the opposing team's helmet. And he made this kind of interesting, painful expression momentarily. They took him out of the game, and evidently they have this tent where they can kind of, it's sort of on its side, and then they must have like a massage table or something, and then they pull this tent over and they can look at a person who's potentially been injured or something. So anyway, I was then thinking about the idea of concussions for football players in general. I have a lot of football player grandchildren. And it was just curious if it might be a tool for treating that kind of thing, because I also just recently was hearing something about older football players who were saying very definitely that they've been damaged by playing football, and of course all the pounding to any part of their body.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Well, I mean, I think you bring up a really good point here, Claire. You may remember that back in 2009, all this research started to come out looking at footballers' brains, when they started to look at cadavers and finding the effects of multiple head injuries had made changes in the brains. curiously enough, I myself was recovering from a head injury at the time that all this came out. And very fortunately, because of my profession, having the resources to have good treatment. But I think a lot of the problem is when there's been a concussion on the sports field and the person, the child or the adult, gets sent right back into the game again. Mm-hmm. And then there's multiple further injuries because the effects of a concussion aren't necessarily seen right away. Mm-hmm. I've treated a lot of people who've gone to the ER after a car accident and have been pronounced fine. But then, you know, the symptoms start to come out a week or two later. Mm. So it's very difficult to tell in the moment mm-hmm. how much effect has been done. But luckily these days, you know, in sports, especially with children, this much more of this is being recognized and the signs of concussion are being looked for and children are being taken out of the games because, as we know, young brains are also very vulnerable to these kind of damages.
Yeah. That's great.
Interesting.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So it looks like we have about 5 more minutes. I'm curious, Claire, do you have any interesting cases that you've had or any clinical experiences that have left you just amazed or grateful for the therapy that you do?
Well, I do a lot of work with crying babies because the effect of birth can leave a tension strain pattern in the membranes that surround the brain. And a lot of these babies that are diagnosed with colic actually have a headache. And the only way they can tell us about that is from crying. Mm-hmm. So I've worked with many, many of those babies and changed the whole family's life, which is tremendously rewarding. Mm-hmm. And one case comes to mind. This is a pretty severe case of a baby who was in the neonatal intensive care, who'd had a vacuum extraction on their head 7 times, which is very unusual amount. For those of you who may not know, a vacuum extraction is kind of a suction cup, a bit like a toilet plunger, mm-hmm. that's used on a baby's head during a difficult birth and gives the OB extra traction to pull the head out. And so this child was isolated. The mother wasn't even allowed to hold him very much. Mm-hmm. And he couldn't nurse. And after the first treatment, he really relaxed. He took a long nap and he started nursing right away. And I went back the second day for a follow-up and he was then discharged after my second treatment. And I got to meet him when he was 16 and he was a healthy young man and very happy. And it was lovely to have that follow-up.
Yeah.
The other kinds of things that I see often is probably like a man who's been doing working extra hard, bending over, and they come in like the Leaning Tower of Pisa with a back spasm, can't straighten up.
Oh, right.
And those kind of situations also, you treat them and send them home for some rest and anti-inflammatories. And when they come back for a second treatment, usually they're being able to put their shoes on and move around much more easily. And after a second or third time, you know, they're back to normal movement patterns. So great. That's very rewarding too.
So yeah. Catherine, if someone wanted to contact you for a treatment, here on the island or?
Yes, via my website, which is Catherine with a C, CatherineHenderson.net. And that has all my contact information on it.
Yeah. Well, I was just going to say, I'm sure there's a lot of men on the island who are working hard out there and might need your help. So that's great. So I think we're just about out of time here. And I just want to say thank you so much, Catherine, for coming on and sharing your work with us. I think it's a great thing. And reach out to her if you need help. I encourage the listeners to do that.
I learned a great deal. So I really appreciate you sharing your experience and broadening my understanding of osteopathy. And I would love to say I'll be there, and I'll be there when I need to be there, I guess.
That's what they all say, right, Catherine?
Yes. I know. Nice to be needed.
Yeah. Okay. Well, thanks for listening, everybody. And we will talk to you next week.
All right, Lisa. Thanks a lot, as usual.
Have a good day.
Take care.